All right. Now, at this point, then, we will continue with the Torah portion for this evening. So if you got your scriptures handy, turn to the book of, this would be Devarim, Deuteronomy, chapter 7. And we're about halfway through chapter 7. The portion this week begins at verse 12. And it says, "It shall come to pass because..." And the word there literally is echev, which is the because part of that. And what's interesting about this word, I mention this every year, of course, is the root of echev is achav. You may recognize that as ya'akav, right? And it has to do with taking something by the heel or grappling. All of those things, of course, we associate with the life of Yaakov, and it's interesting. So it shall come to pass because you hearken. And that root kind of implies shamar, of course, hearken, hear, listen, do, obey, to these ordinances and keep them and do them, that Yahuwah will do these things. He will keep with you the covenant and the mercy which he swore unto your fathers. So there is this word, because. And then we're going to see something else in this portion, and it's a really interesting word. It is, it's ahav, right? The root word that means love. And I guess what I'm going to suggest as we go through here is that, the Greek has several words for it, and so does, the English conflates a lot of things together. I tend to think that we don't really quite understand what this word means. And if we will read it in the context that it's used in the word achav here in the scriptures, we'll get a better understanding. Because it says in verse 13, "And he," meaning Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, "will love you, bless you, multiply you. Also bless the fruit of your body and your land, all your stuff that grows, your corn, your wine, your new oil, the increase of your cattle and the young of your flock, all these things that he swore unto your fathers to give you. You'll be blessed above all peoples, no barren female or even cattle among you. He'll take away all sickness and put none of the various diseases of Mitzrayim, of Egypt, upon you. He will instead lay them upon those that hate you. And you'll consume all of these various folks in the land before whom Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh is going to deliver unto you. Don't pity them, and for crying out loud, do not serve their gods, their so-called mighty ones, Elohim, because that will be a nasty snare unto you. Don't be afraid of them either," he says. You've seen all of this stuff, and we'll come back to this concept because it appears in here several times. The signs and wonders, the things that Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh brought you out of by a mighty hand. So will he do to all these other peoples, the ones that you are at least potentially afraid of? Bad stuff will happen to them. Don't be affrighted at them, because he is in the midst of you. He is an El who is truly great and awful, and he'll cast out those nations before you little by little. And the reason here is interesting, too, because basically it's going to take time for you to grow into the role. Don't consume them quickly, because the beasts of the field might otherwise increase upon you. And Yahuwah will deliver them up until they're destroyed. You'll set their kings in your hands and make their name perish from under Hashemayim, under the heavens, and no man will be able to stand against you until you have literally destroyed them. Now, it's the last couple of verses here that I'm kind of working up to, because, and I do this every year too. I'll admit it. Sometimes I say, you know what? I don't want to be too repetitive as we go through the Torah portions. I know we have new people. We also got people that have said, "Oh yeah, I've heard this a bunch of times." Well, you know what? I hearken back to the wisdom of a rabbi friend of mine who told me, you know, one of the old sayings about Torah that they talk about is, "Man is not wise in the Torah till he's been through it 40 times, 40 years." And I still haven't been through it probably 40 times. And that goes for most of us. So I have no problem, I guess, when I step and think about it, about this idea of repetition. But that is particularly appropriate for these couple of verses, the last two verses in chapter 7. Now, this is another one of those places where I'm going to suggest to you that if you have discussions with people about Roman paganism, about the church that I sometimes in this context refer to as the Extian Church, and all the various things that have been added to that we essentially are beginning to learn that we need to come out of and separate ourselves from. This is a really good place to take them. So all you got to do is remember Deuteronomy chapter 7. Just look at the end of it. And as I've been through this, maybe not even the first dozen or so times, but eventually this really struck out at me. Just how blunt and undeniable it is. He's talking about the images of their so-called gods, the places where they worship. And by the way, if you think about it, folks, have you ever seen pictures of St. Peter's Basilica in Rome, full of all these pagan gods and goddesses? Oh, well, this is a statue of Peter. I had a friend say, oh, really? Take a close look at the nether regions of the so-called Peter there and ask yourself the question, is the blankety-blank in that particular statue circumcised? Then it ain't Peter. In other words, these are statues of various Roman gods. What was supposed to be done with them? Well, it says right here, the graven images of their gods you are and should have burned with fire. You're not even supposed to covet the gold or the silver that's on them or take it, because it could be a snare to you, much less leave these pagan statues hanging around in a place that you claim is set apart. What I'm trying to tell you is just when you want to see just how far gone some of these practices and pagan things that we accept but don't really recognize for just how nasty they are and how angry they make the King of the Universe, go read verses like this and ask yourself, what does it mean? Is he still serious? Does it sound like he's serious here? Don't even take the stuff. Don't even salvage the gold or silver on these things. For crying out loud, this is serious. Because this stuff will snare you, he says. And Shazam, he was right. It has. We got 1,700 years of paganism that has literally infused all of ex-Chianity today to the point where they don't understand how much paganism there is because they have been snared. And it says this. This is an abomination. It's the strongest word in the Hebrew. To Yahuwah Eloheka. Now, verse 26, though, is really the capper. And this is the one that, like I said, one day I remember reading this verse and it just kind of leaped off the page at me. All of a sudden, I got it. Ask yourself the question about bunnies and eggs at Easter time, or little skeletons and other kind of stuff at the All Hallows Eve high pagan satanic holiday, or a tree. Asherah pole, various kinds of things to celebrate Mithra's, the sun god's birthday, December the 25th. Here's what verse 26 says. Take this to heart. And again, be able to show people this. Just point this out to them. You shall not bring an abomination into your house, because you'll end up accursed like it. What? No Christmas trees? Pardon my bluntness here. You're damn right. Why do I say it that way? Because it says, do not bring this damnable, that's the word abomination. This is something which is really, really nasty. It's the strongest word in the language. Do not bring an abomination into your house, lest you be accursed like it. How's that for serious? It's just a Christmas tree, Mark. It's just a couple bunnies and eggs. Lest you be accursed like it. What are you supposed to do instead? Oh, it's okay, bring it. No, you are to utterly detest it, and you are to utterly abhor it. The English words, too, give you kind of the impression of how serious this is. For it is a devoted thing. Ki harem. It's an accursed thing, a devoted thing. What does a devoted thing mean in the English? Well, what this is saying, these things are devoted to the wrong gods. They're set apart. That's right. And they're supposed to be set apart from us. So, very interesting, very powerful stuff, and very, very much overlooked. I will suggest as we go through these Torah portions, within about these three portions, literally right at the heart of Torah and the things that are important here, we are being reminded of what it is that should, if we were reading his book and walking in obedience to him, if we truly loved him, in other words, and we'll come back to that, what we should have been doing and haven't been, at least not until we've come out of all this paganism. chapter 8. All these commandments which I command you this day, you shall observe to do, that you may live and multiply and go and possess the land which Yahuwah swore unto your fathers. Well, see, there you go, Mark. We don't have to worry about this anymore because we're not in the land. We were so full of whoring and abominations and all this other Christmas and Ishtar stuff that we got kicked out, rightfully so. And as we'll see in tonight's Torah portion, half Torah portion, Isaiah 50, given a get for our adulterous whoring. Literally, Israel was kicked out and given a certificate of divorce for this kind of stuff. So, does that mean that because we're not in the land and not likely to get back? Well, not likely to get back as long as we keep on whoring and committing adultery, I guess, anyway. We're not in the land. I'm going to suggest, of course, that the obvious thing is what verse 2 tells us. We ought to be instead remembering the way in which Yahuwah has led us, even if it's many, 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 many generations ago at this point, away from this stuff and delivered us from that bondage. 40 years in the wilderness, that he might afflict us, literally chasten us, to prove us, test us, to know what was in our hearts and whether or not we would keep his commandments. The word here is mitzvoti, my mitzvotan, his commandments, or not. Those he loves, he chastens. We see that, and we'll get another little glimpse at it here. He has afflicted you, fed you, and caused you to suffer hunger, too. Fed you with manna as well, things that you nor your fathers didn't know. What's the point? To make you know that man does not live by bread alone. There's a famous verse, right? Another one of these that gets repeated in places like, interestingly enough, it's both Luke 4:4 and Matthew 4:4. One of the few places where I can think that the verses, at least in the way they've been numbered in the English, line up. Man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. Your sandals didn't get old, nor did your clothing. And you shall know, it says here, yada is the root word, yada, 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 know intimately in your heart, that just as a man chastens his son, so it is that Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh chastens you. Those he loves, he chastens, like a father to a son. And ultimately, this word love, ahav, keeps coming back up. I will suggest to you again that it's right here. That root word yada, to know, what we're supposed to know in our hearts, is the same word, of course, that we see Adam knew his wife, to know intimately, literally. It can mean a sexual kind of knowledge, but what it does mean above all these things is a very intimate, first-hand, experiential, literally a relational kind of understanding and knowledge. That's why the father chastens his son, because, in fact, he truly loves him. You are to keep the commandments of Yahuwah Eloheka, to walk in his ways, to fear him. For Yahuwah is bringing you into a good land. A lot of good stuff here. Water, fountains, depths, springing forth in valleys and hills, land of wheat and barley, vines and fig trees, olive trees and honey, where you can eat all that you need without scarceness. You won't lack for anything. Stones, there are iron, and out of the hills you can dig brass. You'll eat and be satisfied, and you will bless Yahuwah Eloheka for the good land which he has given you. And then once again we get another warning. Now, as I was making my notes for this evening, this one I underlined and said, think about the consequences here. It says in verse 11, beware, lest you forget Yahuwah Eloheka and fail to keep his commandments, his ordinances, and his statutes, mishpatim, hukim, mitzvot, which I command you to this day. So when you're eating and you've got all this good stuff in your belly and you're satisfied, you've built all these nice fancy houses, you're living in them, and you got all kinds of herds and flocks, and your silver and gold is multiplied, everything you have is looking pretty darn good. Are you seeing the parallels here? It happened before. It happened with the people in the land, and I think it happened in America. It happened in an America that basically got real haughty and forgot him and failed the warning and did exactly what this verse is fixing to tell us. Lest your heart be lifted up and you forget Yahuwah Eloheka, who brought you forth out of Egypt, out of bondage, who delivered you out of the British, for crying out loud, and gave you a land from sea to shining sea, in the case of modern America. And how did he get repaid? Well, you got haughty, he could say. Our hearts got lifted up, got all these nice houses. And hell, he's not even welcome in the schools anymore. We took God-given rights, turned them into privileges granted by the biggest brother you can think of, got rid of him, replaced him with a bunch of black-robed priests of another god who now license what he calls abominations and literally call evil good and good evil. Oh, but read what the next verse says. He, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, led you through the wilderness. There are all kinds of things there. Serpents, fiery serpents, scorpion, ground with no water. He brought forth water out of the rock of flint for you. Led you in the wilderness, fed you with manna. Well, hey, now we've got a better set of gods. At least that's what they'll tell us. We have aid to families with dependent children. We have welfare. We have social security. We have everything your heart could desire. We have TV. We have internet. It'll be free. We've got Obama phones. We've got Obamacare. You don't need God anymore to take care of your health care, because Big Brother will do it for you. As a matter of fact, he's not welcome. Again, he will feed you. He will clothe you. He will take care of you. Can you see what's going on? And then maybe you'll even go to verse 17, where it says, you'll end up saying in your heart, my power and the might of my hand has gotten me this wealth. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we built this land. Let me pause for a second there. For some reason, as I go through this every year and I read things like this, and I guess it's particularly poignant because here we are out in the middle of the Mesa, and there's nothing on the grid here. It's all off-grid, solar power, wind power, all that kind of stuff. Essentially, if there's something that is being built, or if there's power to be had, it's because we had to provide it and put it together. So to my mind, this is a real, real poignant warning that really rings home. And when I turn on the water faucet and water comes out, and it's warm, and the sun has warmed it up, and the pipes that took a long time to get installed are pumping water, I'm thankful. Yeah, it was a lot of work. And let's take this warning to heart. Don't ever, 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 ever fall into the trap of saying, my power and the might of my hand has built this. Look at what I have wrought here. It's from him. And we need to not forget that. And that's what verse 18 says. You're to remember Yahuwah Eloheka. It's he that has given you the power to get the wealth, that he might establish his covenant, the one he swore to your fathers, as it is this day. And it'll be that if you forget Yahuwah Eloheka, and if you walk after those other gods, the gods of Washington and of Madison Avenue and Hollywood and you name it, we got all kinds of new gods. We got old gods, too. We still got sun god worship and Mithras and Ishtar and all of those. If you serve those other fake gods, I forewarn you this day, he says, you will surely perish. As the nations that Yahuwah has made to perish before you, the Canaanites, Perizzites, Hittites, and all those other ites, you too will perish, because you would not hearken, you wouldn't listen, you would not obey the voice of Yahuwah Eloheka. So, verse 19 goes on and says the following. Hear, O Israel. Hey, this is going to sound familiar. Hear, O Israel. Shema, Israel. This day you're going to go over to the Jordan. Dispossess these greater and mightier nations than you. They got all kinds of fancy fortified cities. They're great big dudes too, sons of the Anakim, whom you know, and of whom you've heard it said, who can stand up before the sons of Anak? So know, therefore, this day, it's Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, who's going over before you as a devouring fire. He's going to take care of this whole situation. And by the way, here comes another warning that is similar to the one about the house. I didn't build this with the might of my hand. When you find that Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh thrust these people out from before you, don't end up saying something like this. It's my righteousness that Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh has brought me in here to possess this land. No, it's not. It's because of the wickedness of these nations their wickedness, that he's driving them out before you. Not for your righteousness or the uprightness of your heart are you going in, but for the wickedness of those nations does Yahuwah drive them out from before you, that he might do what he promised your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that he was going to do. So therefore, no. And this keeps getting repeated. It is not for your righteousness that he's giving you this good land. Because guess what? Now, here's one of these comments. It was true then. Solomon has it right. Ain't nothing new under the sun. As it was, so is it. You're a stiff-necked people. And I guess that's still true. Remember, do not forget how you... Well, I'm going to put it in the modern vernacular here. Chapter 9, verse 7. How you torqued him off. You were rebellious against Yahuwah. At Horeb, Mount Sinai, you really, really torqued him off. You made him wroth. He was so angry, he was fixing to destroy you. Moshe tells him he'd gone up out of the mountains, got those tables of stone, was up there for 40 days and 40 nights. Yeah, it was tough. He didn't drink bread or eat water, or vice versa. And Yahuwah gave him two tables of stone written with his finger, literally. All these words, all those things that he spoke to you out of the fire that day. So, Yahuwah said to me at the end of that 40 days and nights, get on down there for crying out loud. The people you have brought forth out of Mitzrayim are dealing corruptly, literally. We haven't even had the consummation, if you will, of the veritable marriage ceremony, and they've already gone a-whoring. They turned aside out of the way which I commanded them. They made themselves the molten image. And furthermore, we get this same message again. Yahuwah spoke to me. He says, Moshe, I have seen this people, and behold, they are some stiff-necked sons of guns. Let me alone. I'm going to destroy them and blot out their name from under heaven. And I'll take you, Moshe, and make a greater and mightier nation out of you. So I came down. I looked, oh man, you were doing it just as he had said. You made a molten calf, you had turned aside so quickly. So I took those two tables and I smashed them on the ground before your eyes. And I fell down before Yahuwah, just same as first time, 40 days and 40 nights, no more bread, no more water, because of all your sin in doing that which was evil in the sight of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh to torque him off. Did we lose something here? Nope, still got ones? Okay.
You should read
Stomper's Okay. All right, I see what it was. Thank you for the ones, though. Sometimes when I'm looking away from the screen, there's an issue there. So back on track, anyway. Moshe's telling the story. He broke the tablets, fell down, and I was in dread of the anger and hot displeasure because he was so mightily torqued off, he was fixing to destroy you. But he listened to me that time too. He was angry with Aaron as well. I prayed for Aaron. I took your sin, the calf which you had made, I burned it with fire, beat it in pieces, ground it up very small until it was fine as dust. Now at this point, I'm going to suggest to you that if you've read Numbers chapter 5, the miracle, literally, the remedy for the jealous husband, this may not be a precise match, but it certainly rhymes. In other words, it looks very, very similar to what the priest does to a woman suspected of adultery by her husband. I cast the dust into the brook that descended out of the mount, and all these other places, Tabor, Amasa, Kibrot, Hata'ava, you made Yahuwah wroth. And when he sent you out of Kadesh Barnea, go up and get the land, he said. You rebelled against his commandments then. You didn't believe him, nor shamar to his voice. Yep, you've been rebellious for as long as I've known you. I'm going to make this comment now, and I'll make it again in a couple of minutes. Remember, a lot of the people who came out of the land of Egypt, of Mitzrayim, with Moshe are already dead. These are, in many cases, the sons. In almost every case, they're the descendants, one or another generation. All of them were under the age of 20 when the bad stuff happened. But nevertheless, he says this, and it makes sense. You've been rebellious against Yahuwah from the day I knew you. I guess that still applies to the kids and the grandkids that he's seen grow up before him. Don't destroy these folks, he prayed. Remember your servants, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Look not unto the stubbornness of these people, nor to their wickedness, nor their sin. Because, and we've heard this argument before, he's repeating it for us, because people might say Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh was not able to bring him into the land that he promised. But they are still your people, your inheritance, and you did. You brought them out by the strength of your arm, by your great power. So chapter 10 tells us, all right, here is where we are. Hew another two tablets, like unto the first. Come with me up into the mount. Make an ark out of wood. I'm going to write on the tables the same things that were on the first ones, the ones you broke, and you can put them in the ark. So I made it out of acacia wood, he said, made these two tablets, went up there. He wrote on the tablets, like the first time, the 10 words, Debarim, that he spoke to you out of the fire. And I came down, put those tables in the ark, and there they are, just as Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh has commanded me. And you all took your journey from these places. Aaron died. He was buried. Eleazar, his son, ministers in the priest's office in his stead. And there were some more journeys, at which time the tribe of Levi was separated to bear the Ark of the Covenant, stand before him and to minister. Remember, Levi has no portion or inheritance with his brethren. They belong to Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, and he literally is their inheritance. That's what it says. And it's true in both directions. According as he has spoken, I stayed up there for 40 days and 40 nights, and then he told me, go down to the people, get them on the road, that they may go in and possess the land which I swore to them. And now Israel, here comes this. This is verse 12. Let me run back again and remind you. This is chapter 10 of Deuteronomy, verse 12. And this has rightly been referred to as literally the heart of the Torah too. And now Israel, it says, what does Yahuwah Eloheka require of you? But to fear Yahuwah Eloheka, to walk in all his ways, ve le'ahava, and to love him. There's that root word, ahav, love. And to love him, and to serve Yahuwah Eloheka with all your heart and with all your soul. Now, this one gets repeated. One of my favorite verses that I quote all the time is John 14:15. It's the words in red in the apostolic writings, and they were spoken by Yeshua. He said, if you love me, keep my commandments. It certainly sounds a heck of a lot like this one. Now, Israel, what does Yahuwah require you but to fear him, to walk in all his ways? I think the word all is important there. And to love him, and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul. And to keep. What? Keep for your good the commandments of Yahuwah and his statutes, which I command you this day. Now, let's pause there. Here's another one of those places. Again, this Torah portion, folks, if you have family members, evangelical Christians, all the law is done away with. If you're hearing that lie, that potty-mouthed lie from the pit of Hades itself, hell, Sheol, death, okay, whether there is a place that is exactly the Christian conception of hell or not, I am not sure. Because really, as you know, the words Sheol and Gehenna aren't exactly as it has been described elsewhere. But I will tell you that if there is a pit of hell, that crap came out of it. The lie that God himself, Yahuwah, cannot keep his commandments and did away with them. Because he says over and over and over again the opposite. And the one that they will point to and say, here, Jesus nailed this stuff to the cross. Well, there may be another Jesus, which we have not preached, as Paul wrote correctly. But the one who, in fact, did come and said he wasn't going to change the smallest part, not one yod or tittle, quotes all of this and makes it very clear. If you love me, keep my commandments. What's he doing? He's telling you the same thing as Deuteronomy 10, verse 12 is. What does he require of you? Fear him. walk in all of his ways, the ones that are, you know, written down here in genuine print and haven't changed, and to love him, ahav him, and serve him with all your heart and with all your soul. Okay, that brings me to this question of what does that mean, to love again? It's appeared several times in this portion alone. I'm going to suggest to you that part of the problem we have, love is all you need. Why, two guys can love each other and get themselves licensed and commit abomination. That makes it perfectly okay, as long as the black-robed priests of another god say so. That's love. You know what, folks? We've completely been misled as to what the word love means. A father loves his son. If he loves his son, he chastens him. He doesn't let his son do something that's stupid enough that the son's going to get killed for it. It's tough love. Well, that's not quite the same as what we're talking about. Well, you know what? I'm going to suggest to you the real problem is the following. It occurs to me that we have been lied to on so many fronts, but one of the things we've been told is love is an emotion. And I've had this. I bet almost everybody listening to me has had this. Do I really love God? Do I have this warm, fuzzy feeling for God in my heart the way I do for my wife or my children or my pet dog or my pet bird Gizmo? Well, he's different. I don't obey my pet dog or my pet bird. Hopefully I obey the creator of the universe. I'm thinking of the line from the song Tevye sings to Golda in Fiddler on the Roof. Do you love me? Do I love you? Well, the whole song basically is they don't necessarily know what love is. And I think that's true today. We don't either. Love is not an emotion. There, I said it. Love is an action. Liza Doolittle, My Fair Lady. If you love me, don't tell me about it. Show me. I'm from Missouri, too. If you love him, don't tell him about it. It's not about a warm, fuzzy feeling, oh, I really love you. If you love me, keep my commandments. There it is. Walk in his ways. Obey him. Serve him with all your heart and with all your soul. I honestly don't think it matters a whit how you feel. And we've got parables that if you think about it, you can look those up too. Right? The parable of the sons. Which one was more obedient? The one that did what he was supposed to be doing. Show me your faith by your works. Don't tell me you love me and then walk in rebellion to me. Don't give me this crap that you love me and then rename the most important day in history after the goddess Ishtar and celebrate what you say is my birthday on the pagan sun god day and do all kinds of stuff, bringing these abominations into your house that I keep telling you, no, don't serve their gods. It's a snare to you. If you love me, keep my commandments. What does the next verse say? Hey, the next verse kind of expounds on that. It says, to keep for your good these commandments of Yahuwah, his statutes, which I command you to this day. Behold, it continues, unto Yahuwah, your Elohim, Eloheka, that's the possessive, right? Your God, Eloheka, belongs the heavens, Hashemayim, and the heaven of heavens, and Ha'aretz, the earth, and with everything that is in them. It's all his. Only, Yahuwah had a delight in the fathers. He loved them. He chose their seed after them. Even you above all peoples as it is this day. Now here we get to another one of these interesting words that turns out to be a bit problematic. It says, therefore, circumcise the foreskin of your heart. Let's pause there. The whole sentence is interesting, but let me pause there. Oh, see, that's one of those things that got done away with. Circumcision. We don't have to do that anymore. Paul has had the living heck twisted out of him for a long time. It's interesting. I remember looking through the Midrash tonight. You will hear in the Exchin Church all kinds of talk about circumcision of the heart. Our hearts are circumcised. That's how come we don't have to walk in obedience to our Creator anymore. That's how come we can ignore everything he says and do all this other stuff that he says abomination. Because our hearts are so circumcised. Oh, really? So it's interesting to read the Midrashim, and see all of these ancient rabbis talking about circumcision of the heart. I think in some respects they got a better understanding. Because essentially what people are saying, at least, well, the words that come out of their mouths are similar. But again, the problem is the same old contrast between the physical and the spiritual. Don't tell me your heart is circumcised if you're still stinking stiff-necked, which is what the end of the sentence talks about here. Be no more stiff-necked. Are we walking in obedience? Or are we still hanging on to all this idolatrous crap? For Yahuwah Eloheka, He is Elohim of Elohim, Lord of Lords, the great, the mighty, the awesome, the awful God who does not regard persons nor take reward. He does, however, execute justice for the fatherless and the widow. He loves the stranger, gives him food and clothing. So you all too, therefore, love the stranger. Remember, you were strangers in the land of Mitzrayim. Keeps telling us that, doesn't it? So, you shall fear Yahuwah, Eloheka. Him you shall serve, to him you shall cleave, and by his name you shall swear. He's your glory, your Elohim. He's done all of these great and tremendous things for you, which your eyes, it says, have seen. And ironically, as I read that, I realize, remember, we haven't. And a lot of those people that he was talking to hadn't seen them with their own eyes. Maybe they were too young to remember a lot of these things. The crossing of the Red Sea, the plagues in Egypt. But they have certainly known any number of witnesses, at least two or three witnesses that had, that could have told them these things. So to a arguably greater extent than we have, they knew personally people who had seen them. It's a little bit like the situation today where, not many of us were around between, late 1850s, during the time after the war between the states. And as a matter of fact, for the most part, we don't even know anybody who knew anybody who was. But we've still heard the stories. Of course, by now, the stories have been pretty well twisted. Well, your fathers, says Moshe, went down into Egypt with 70 folks, 70 people. Now Yahuwah has made you like the stars of heaven for multitudes. So what? So therefore, again, the word, you shall love Yahuwah Eloheka, keep his charge, his statutes, and his ordinances up until they're done away with, nailed to the cross. No, it says always. Interesting. And know this day, and I'm not just speaking with your children that haven't known, that have not seen the chastisement of Yahuwah, his greatness, his mighty hand, his outstretched arm, his signs, his works, all these things he did in the midst of Egypt, to the army of Egypt, to Pharaoh, the horses, all those. And what he did in the wilderness till you came to this place. All these other things. He recounts so many things that we've seen recounted before. But your eyes, he says, have seen all the great work which he did. Again, in some cases, they didn't. But they've certainly got the witnesses. And folks, we have the witnesses too. We have one of the most reliable witnesses in the form of this scripture, of his testimony, of literally anything imaginable. The level of integrity of the Torah is incredible. So what? So again, over and over he repeats it. Therefore, you shall keep all of the commandment which I command you this day. Be strong, go in, possess the land, and prolong your days upon the land that Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh swore to your fathers to give them and their seed flowing with milk and honey. It's not like Egypt that you came out of. It's a land of hills and valleys, drinks the water of heaven, a land that Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh cared for, and his eyes are upon it from the beginning of the year to the end. And it ends with this segment here. Another set of if-then statements. It will come to pass if you shall hearken diligently to my commandments, which I command you this day, to Ahav, Yahuwah Eloheka, to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul. Yeah, that sounds strangely familiar, doesn't it? I'll give you the rain of your land in season, former and latter rain. You'll gather in all the corn and the wine and your oil, grass for your cattle. You'll eat and be satisfied. And the same warning is repeated too. But take heed, lest you be deceived. Turn aside and serve other gods and worship them, and the anger of Yahuwah be kindled against you, and he shuts up the heavens, no rain, the ground won't yield its fruit, and you perish quickly. Therefore, lay up my words in your heart and your soul, bind them for a sign upon your hand. Does this sound familiar? And they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. And you can probably repeat it with me, right? You shall teach your children. When you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down and when you rise up, and you shall write them upon the doorposts of your house and upon your gates. This is, if you will, Shema Israel part 2, the other part that we repeat every week of the commandments. Bear this stuff in mind, so that your days may be multiplied and the days of your children in this good land. And if, again, you diligently keep all of this commandment, which I command you, to do it, to love Yahuwah Eloheka, to walk in all of his ways, and to cleave unto him. Is anybody counting? How many times have we repeated these same words? How many times has the so-called church basically said, this is all done away with? We don't do this anymore. Oh, we love him, all right. We just don't listen to him. No wonder the if doesn't seem to apply. If you will diligently keep this commandment, do it, love Yahuwah, walk in his ways, cleave unto him, then he will drive out these nations before you. You'll dispossess these greater and mightier nations than yourselves. Every place you tread the sole of your foot on will be yours. He names all these places here. No man will be able to stand against you, and he will lay the fear and the dread of you upon the land that you shall tread upon, just as he has spoken to you. Now, interestingly, that's where the portion ends. It's almost like a hanging if. Well, what if not? I guess the what if not we're going to talk about next week, and to some extent, folks, we already know it, because that's the rest of the story, right? The rest of the story is about how both northern and southern kingdoms, first they split, then they split away from him. And they fell into whoring, and they did all the exact things that they were warned against. And here we are today, still, in so many respects, deceived, walking in disobedience. So I mentioned this. We'll talk about it probably a little bit more tomorrow. But since I did mention the Haftorah portion, I will at least read, do a quick summary of Isaiah Chapter 50. It actually starts in the end of chapter 49, goes for a little ways, and then goes all the way up to first couple of verses in 51, the Haftorah portion. And it says, essentially, at the place where it begins, in about verse 14 here, that Zion says, Yahuwah has forsaken me, and my Elohim has forgotten me. Can a woman forget her nursing child? It asks rhetorically. Well, it's not like he's forgotten them or us. It's more like, if we'll read what it says here, we've been warned. And we failed on the if parts. Now, that's the royal we. We weren't around, but ultimately, yeah, we're still walking in that same kind of rebellion. And just as the fathers that caused some of the problems weren't there, and Moshe is talking to the sons or the grandsons, and he says, look, I still know you. You're still a stiff-necked people. I guess it still applies. And whether we like to admit it or not, we're still a stiff-necked people. We're still walking in rebellion. And if anything, folks, it's worse. I know I get kind of angry when I look at the news and I read the things that are going on and say, for crying out loud, how much worse can it get? But the stiff-neckedness is out there. So I go to the middle of this portion where it's Isaiah chapter 50. Thus says Yahuwah. And this is a rhetorical question that is asked. Now, you know that in Deuteronomy 24, it talks about when a man puts away his wife, there is a process that is involved. And he is to take a sefer kerituta, literally a certificate of divorce. You'll hear it called a get sometimes, too, and put it in her hand when he sends her away. And if she has that, then she can go and be remarried. And here is what Yahuwah asks rhetorically, Israel. Thus says Yahuwah, where? Show me, where is this certificate, the Sefer Keretuta, of your mother, whom I have put away? Or, maybe you can think of it this way, which is it of my creditors that I have sold you to? No. It's for your iniquities, your Torahlessness that you've sold yourselves, and for your transgressions, your whoring, has your mother been put away. And I believe there's a message there, and that it hasn't changed.